listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Welcome back to another episode. Today, I want to talk about the Mueller report. Also had a conversation with my daughter, Kelvy Vanderhart, who is a assistant editor with Caffeinated Thoughts, as well as a frequent contributor for the National Pulse, about the Green New Deal. But before we get to all that, first, a word from our sponsor, American Principles Project.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
And we're back. Well, on Sunday afternoon, Attorney General William Barr sent House and Senate Judiciary Committee leadership a summary of the principal findings from the report Special Counsel Robert Mueller submitted to the Department of Justice on Friday from their 22-month-long investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 elections. Barr noted that Mueller had 19 attorneys working for him and had the assistance of approximately 40 FBI agents. During his investigation, Mueller issued more than 2,800 subpoenas, executed nearly 500 search warrants, and interviewed approximately 500 witnesses. The Attorney General also confirmed that Mueller recommended no additional indictments, and there were no sealed indictments not yet made public. And he revealed two primary findings from the Mueller report. The first is that the Mueller investigation did not establish that the Trump campaign colluded or coordinated with Russia. Mr. Barr wrote, quote, "The special counsel's investigation did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with Russia in its efforts to influence the 2016 presidential election. As the report states, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities," unquote. Barr noted the report stated that Russia attempted to influence the 2016 election in two primary ways. The first was a disinformation campaign, primarily through social media, instigated by Russia's Internet Research Agency. This was in the form of a lot of Facebook ads, Twitter, you know, bots, just basically fake Facebook pages cropping up that got, unfortunately, that promoted a lot of fake news and unfortunately got way, way, way too much traction. So the second thing was computer hacking efforts leading to the release of Democratic National Committee and Clinton campaign emails through various intermediaries, including WikiLeaks. Barr stated that Mueller noted that no one from the Trump campaign was involved in either of those efforts. The second finding, was that Mueller did not draw a conclusion as to whether President Trump obstructed justice. Regarding the investigation into whether he obstructed the Russia investigation, Barr said Mueller stated that, "While this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it does not exonerate him." He said the report lays out evidence related to that question and leaves the decision to the Attorney General. Barr wrote, quote, "Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and I have concluded that the evidence developed during the special counsel's investigation is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense." He noted that the decision was not based on Trump's position as sitting president, but on the actions, many of which were public, in light of what was required to prove obstruction and to do so beyond a reasonable doubt. So he said basically, as far as where we're going to go from here, with releasing the report, that the review of the report continues in light of the federal rule of criminal procedure that forbids the release of information related to matters that still may be before a grand jury. And he said once that review is released, he'll be in the position to, quote, move forward expeditiously in determining what can be released in light of applicable law, regulations, and department policies, unquote. I can't remember who I saw it over the weekend, or actually earlier this week. Basically, he's looking at weeks, not months, as far as releasing the report. I don't know exactly how much will be, redacted. I hope not very much. Because I think oftentimes federal government over-redacts things, but we'll have to see. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He claims the report vindicated the president. He said, quote, I've just received the top-line findings from Attorney General Barr. Good day for the rule of law. Great day for President Trump and his team. No collusion, no obstruction. The cloud hanging over President Trump has been removed by this report. Bad day for those hoping that the Mueller investigation would take President Trump down. Great job by Mr. Mueller and his team to thoroughly examine all things Russia. Now it's time to move on, govern the country, and get ready to combat Russia and other foreign actors ahead of 2020. Unquote. Democrat Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York, chairman for the House Judiciary Committee, noted that while Mueller did not exonerate him, didn't find that he committed a crime, but he didn't exonerate him. He said, quote, Barr says that the president may have acted to obstruct justice, but that for an obstructionist conviction, the government would need to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a person acting with corrupt intent engaged in obstructive conduct, unquote. He said, quote, but special counsel, continuing on, special counsel Mueller clearly and explicitly is not exonerating the president, and we must hear from AG Barr about his decision making and see all the underlying evidence for the American people to know all the facts. There must be full transparency in what special counsel Mueller uncovered to not exonerate the president from wrongdoing. DOJ owes the public more than just a brief synopsis and decision not to go any further in their work. Unquote. Our senior senator Chuck Grassley here in Iowa, also Republican, former chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he said Mueller's finding matched what his own review found. Quote, the principal finding from the special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation confirms that my own review found. There was no collusion between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin to influence the presidential election. These findings were reached after significant efforts to thoroughly and fully uncover the facts by a team of professional investigators. He said, I look forward to reviewing more details about the steps Robert Mueller's team took at taxpayer expense to reach these conclusions. In the meantime, this should serve as an opportunity for those who have engaged in baseless, irresponsible speculation the past few years simply because they do not like the president to reflect on how they have contributed to Putin's goal of undermining American faith in our system of government. For the good of our nation, I hope we can all accept the Justice Department's findings and move forward. Unquote. You'll notice going back to what Congressman Nadler of New York said, you'll hear this phrase a lot, full transparency. I've got a lineup of some clips. First of all, James Comey was asked about his opinion of, I don't know why we care about the disgraced former FBI director's opinion of the Mueller investigation, but he had this to say.
I don't know that I read the letter from the Attorney General that way. I read him as saying the special counsel didn't find that the evidence established that there was any conspiracy between an American and the Russians. What other evidence there is, what evidence there might be that falls short of that standard, I have no idea.
Established is the word that you're honing in on there?
Correct. And so I don't know what the special counsel found, and I'm prepared, I hope everybody is, to wait and get the transparency that we need.
That was an interview with Lester Holt of MSNBC, established collusion. Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, you have to be able to get an indictment. You're going to have, you know, basically prove that there's probable cause. It's not exactly the same standard as to get a criminal conviction to get an indictment, but it's really not that hard for a prosecutor to get an indictment from a grand jury. The joke used to say you can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich, not because the ham sandwich is necessarily criminally minded, but it's just because it's a one-sided affair that the prosecutor and one side presenting the case, it's easier to sway a grand jury than it is necessarily a jury in a criminal court proceeding. So let's see. I want to play Eric Swalwell. He's the congressman from California. He's in the House Judiciary and House Intelligence Committees. He's also considering running for president. He had this to say. I believe he was talking to Wolf Blitzer.
Court. Democrats have accused the attorney general of rushing to judgment on the question of obstruction of justice. But CNN has learned that Robert Mueller told Bill Barr, the attorney general, some 3 weeks ago that he wouldn't draw a conclusion on that specific obstruction issue. If the evidence didn't unequivocally convince Robert Mueller that a crime had been committed, is it wishful thinking for Democrats to try and prove obstruction of justice?
Well, again, our standard is different than proof beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, the president shouldn't be taking a victory lap that the best day of his presidency is that he was not charged with the crime. If he still committed offensive conduct that does not meet the conduct we want for our president, Congress has a constitutionally equal role to play to hold him accountable. That's why I think we should just see the report. But Wolf, I will note, what concerns me about the attorney general making this decision and not the special counsel is the whole point of the special counsel was to act in a way that a conflicted political appointee by a subject of the investigation, the president who's appointed Barr, could not. So the special counsel was supposed to make decisions that someone who has a conflict of interest could not. So I do want to learn more about why the special counsel would give this authority to the attorney general. Well,
so basically, you know, obviously the special counsel was appointed because former Attorney General Sessions had to recuse himself. I'm not sure we would have had a special counsel if it were not for that. You know, obviously we can't, you know, it's impossible to tell. But, you know, there's actually also when it comes to obstruction of justice, there is a higher standard to prove, you know, that obstruction actually happened. And Mueller pointed that out. He said, basically, you need to be able to prove corrupt intent. And here's the thing is that it's hard to prove that if there's no crime committed. Now, did President Trump do and say some, you know, kind of weird things that drew unwanted attention onto him? Absolutely. Yes, that he did do that. And I think in light of, you know, had the collusion finding gone the other way, then I think we're you know, looking at a totally different set of circumstances, and that evidence is looked at in a completely different light. But since a finding of you know, criminality wasn't found when it came to collusion, and there was no participation of the by the Trump campaign staff or the president himself in, you know, coordinating with Russia or colluding with them for the social media aspect of the interference, as well as the hacking, you know, why would the president then try to obstruct an investigation? Especially also, it's been pointed out, he was told at the time before he fired James Comey that he wasn't under investigation. So you got to consider that as well. He didn't exactly make the best, you know, political moves as far as some of his interviews are concerned. As far as firing James Comey, I think he had a lot of cause to fire James Comey. Was it the best timing? Probably not. But he's the president of the United States. He's the chief executive. He's exercising his Article II powers to fire the FBI director, and he was legally and constitutionally allowed to do so. You know, if he colluded with Russia and it found out that's why he fired James Comey, then that, you know, then again, okay, that's a whole, again, we look at that in a whole different light, but that wasn't the case. So Eric Holder actually said this was good news for the president. Listen in to this clip.
Does the lack of the conspiracy indictment clear Donald Trump of collusion?
I think it does. I mean, on the basis of what I have seen, I've not seen the Mueller report, but basis of the letter that Attorney General Barr put together, it would seem to me that that is a substantial finding there. And I think it's good news for, you know, for the president and for his campaign.
Definitely good news for the president, good news for the United States. We should not root on or hope for our president being tied to, you know, criminal activity. It would have been bombshell if the Mueller investigation came out and said, yes, the Trump campaign and the president himself engaged in collusion with Russia to interfere with our election. That would have been awful. That would have put us in a constitutional crisis. That, I think, would have been worthy of impeachment. But that has not come out. And as far as the obstruction evidence, you know, yeah, we have, there's public on the record, President Trump saying some dumb things and probably doing some things that wasn't necessarily great timing. I'm not sure any of that points to actual crime. I don't think it does, especially in light, again, as I said before, there was no crime, there was no collusion. So, you know, Democrats, you know, if they're eager to try to impeach him off of that evidence, I think they're going to find that's a political minefield. The two more presidential hopefuls weighed in. Kamala Harris, U.S. Senator from California, had this to say.
Well, I don't have yet enough information to actually assess what is whether what Barr did is appropriate or not. I can only assume, though, that it took him only 2 days to write a 4-page summary of an investigation that was conducted over the course of 2 years and seemingly around the clock. So it calls into question the integrity of the document that he submitted, that 4-page document, and the integrity of it in terms of whether or not it was comprehensive enough to give the American public a sense of what the investigation actually discovered, uncovered, and involved. For that reason, I strongly believe that in the interest of transparency, in the interest of the American public, public's interest in knowing and right to know, that there should be full transparency, that the Mueller report should be made public, that the underlying evidence should be available to Congress. I believe and feel strongly that the Attorney General Barr should be required to testify before the United States Congress under oath, because Congress has a responsibility and a duty to the American public to perform its oversight responsibilities. And in this case, we are presented with some of the most troubling issues and concerns in terms of the various branches of government, and Congress should be allowed to do its job, which is oversight in particular as it relates to this issue, and that requires transparency, which we've not yet received, obviously.
Need full transparency, and I agree. I think the report needs to come out. I think it will come out. He has not said he won't release it. President Trump is actually encouraging. He's okay with it being released. So, you know, we're going to see it, but it's going to take some time. And as far as her comments regarding, you know, a 4-page summary, that's just that's just an opening salvo. That's just to get some basic information out. That's so, you know, because people obviously have that burning question, was there collusion? And he could answer that right off the bat. Also, with reports, you know, generally reports start with an executive summary. And I'm sure his summary was a summary of the executive summary of the report. So, you know, beyond minutia evidence, which the American people aren't going to likely get into. And also I want to bring up the fact that the American public really isn't laser focused on Russia like the political class in D.C. is. So, you know, it's not a burning issue in the United States. It's also not a burning issue here in Iowa. There was a Democratic former Democratic congressional candidate that basically says, you know, from all the time I spent talking with Iowans about, you know, his race, about the Iowa 3rd congressional district race, he said not one time did a voter bring up Russia. He said, this is not something people are focused on. It's time to move on. This is a Democrat speaking. So, you know, I think we need to get the information out there, certainly. But to say that, you know, to imply that he's not going to do that, it's just disingenuous. It just takes time. They got to go over and make sure nothing, you know, there's nothing that would endanger national security that's going to be released. And again, I hope they don't over redact this thing. They shouldn't. They need to keep the redactions to a bare minimum. But it, you know, it takes time to review. The New York Times today said basically the report itself is 300 pages long, and all the underlying evidence that Democrats are saying they want to have released and made public, that we're talking thousands and thousands of pieces of evidence and documents. I mean, so again, it's going to take time to go through. Mueller again said it'll be weeks, not months. So hopefully we will have that out and be able to get this behind us. Also, Spartacus could not avoid the opportunity to weigh in on this issue. Spartacus, of course, is U.S. Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey, a Democrat who's also running for president. Here's that clip.
Well, real collusion going on, you said. Do you now have to revise that to say not chargeable collusion?
Again, when I have a attorney general who, in my opinion, is suspect, filtering a report that I have not seen, I'm not willing to conclude anything yet based upon a letter that he wrote.
So you, but let's ask
press
about
me.
It.
Yeah, press me on that.
But Bob Mueller didn't charge anyone for conspiracy collusion on the election.
Right.
So you know that at the criminal level, Bob Mueller's now done. He's not doing the probe anymore.
Bob Mueller is a soldier that knows that his department has said a sitting president cannot be charged, cannot be indicted.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, I think that this is an issue for Congress. Let's look at the fact pattern. Let's look at the report and come to our own conclusion.
Okay.
Okay. Just a couple points regarding what Senator Booker said. First of all, why Attorney General Barr is suspect is beyond me. Attorney General Barr has served with distinction. This is not his first time, you know, at the rodeo. He was a attorney general before under President George H.W. Bush. He has an impeccable service record. He's very intelligent. He spoke in favor of the Russia investigation, and so I don't exactly know what makes him suspect other than President Trump appointed him. So you know, I think that was a irresponsible comment made by Spartacus there, as well as, you know, another point I want to make too is first of all, there's a Department of Justice rule that a sitting president can't be indicted. However, do we really think that if there was collusion going on by the Trump campaign, others wouldn't be involved? For instance, several people have been indicted, certainly, and there's several Russians who've been indicted for interfering with the election, and that's obviously not going to go anywhere because Russia is not going to extradite them here to the United States. But, you know, the president isn't the only one who would have been involved. Also, of all those indictments, minus the Russians, all the American indictments, none of those indictments have anything to do with collusion or interfering with the presidential election. So to think that President Trump is somehow guilty of collusion, like Spartacus says, but yet nobody else is, and he's not going to indict anybody else, you know, that's crazy. At some point you got to say, okay, there was no collusion by the campaign. There might have been some inappropriate contacts with Russia, or at least not necessarily inappropriate, but at least undisclosed. I think that was probably the worst case, is that they just didn't disclose this information and get it out in the open. But that doesn't mean that they worked with the Kremlin to interfere with our election. So also, too, you know, they keep on talking about, well, it's Barr's report, it's Barr's summary. If Attorney General Barr was saying anything that was not appropriate or was in contradiction to the Mueller report, it's not like Robert Mueller's gone anywhere. It's not like he wouldn't be able to say anything. And I think he would. If Attorney General Barr was completely lying about the report, you know, I would certainly expect Bob Mueller to speak up, but he hasn't. So this is going to, unfortunately, I'd like to see this chapter close and move on. It's going to, you know, drag out a little bit more probably. And once it, unfortunately, while the legal aspect of this is closed, the political aspect is still wide open. And we're going to see probably more of a circus down the road with committee hearings and investigation and congressional investigations. So with that said, I had a lovely conversation with my, always have a lovely conversation with my daughter, Kelvy Vanderhart. She, as you may be aware, is an associate editor here with Caffeinated Thoughts. And she also writes frequently for the National Pulse. She and I discussed last night the Green New Deal. So without further ado, here's that conversation.
Hey, Kelvy, thanks for joining me on the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast.
Oh, yeah, always good to talk to you when it's being recorded and not just, you know, in the kitchen.
Yeah. Yep, definitely. So you have words, as do I. The Senate recently had a vote on the Green New Deal. I can't remember the resolution number. It was in the form of a non-binding resolution.
Right. Such an impact right there. Non-binding right. resolution. How visionary. Right.
Yes. So it was 57-0 against, and 43 Democrats basically voted present. I think it was 57. Maybe it was 53.
I believe it was 57-43. Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, it wasn't to 40, because it's actually technically 57-0, because voting present doesn't do
okay,
anything.
Well, yes. It just yes, technicality.
It was just, hi, I was here, basically. I thought it was
super
interesting.
Super bold
that,
and brave.
Right. I thought it was interesting that Democrats, including the bill sponsor, did not want to vote for the Green New Deal.
You know, I think it's really interesting how you sponsor a piece of, well, this isn't even a piece of legislation. It's a non-binding resolution that's supposed to radically shake America, save the planet from burning up in flames. And you sponsor this legislation, and then you act as if voting on it is a big trick, which, I mean, I don't give kudos to Mitch McConnell very frequently, but kudos to Mitch McConnell, because this was really smart. But I'm like, no, you can either back it or you can not back it. Those are your options. But apparently they found a loophole, which maybe they think it made them look good. I think it made them look foolish.
Right.
Yeah, but as does this entire Green New Deal mess. So what's new?
Right. I was just looking at, I mean, some of the issues, there are a lot. It was a rather lengthy bill. And I don't know, I haven't read the Senate version. I don't know if it's the same thing that Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez put up on her website, but the language in it, I mean, the thing that really struck out to me the most was basically to retrofit, this is my summary, paraphrase, every building in America to make it more, you know, energy efficient.
Right.
Every building in America. I'm like, what? That's crazy. I can't believe that somebody even thinks that's a reasonable goal. Especially, you know, basically the Green New Deal, for our listeners who may not be aware, it aims to achieve 40% to 60% global reductions in man-made greenhouse gases, carbon emissions mainly, from 2010 levels by 2030 and net zero emissions by 2050.
Ludicrous. I mean, unless you're going to go and govern the entire planet, which is, I guess, you know, Ocasio-Cortez's next step. But, I mean, this Green New Deal wouldn't even accomplish that. And if you want, I mean, if she's talking about the United States achieving zero emissions, fine. Okay, this is still ludicrous, but fine. But she's not looking to foreign, you know, problems that are causing it either. And so it's basically a wash.
Yeah, I was just reading this Heritage article on the cost. Basically, they're estimating 1.4 million jobs lost as a result of the Green New Deal if it was ever implemented into law. and a $3.9 trillion hit to the economy.
All in all, it would cost $93 trillion to implement.
Well,
so,
yeah, that's just the hit to the economy, not what.
Yeah, not even the cost.
And 93 is obviously that's the max number, but that is, for perspective, more money than the U.S. government has ever spent in our entire existence, basically.
Which just I'm sure some Democrats would probably see that as a challenge, like, hey, let's beat it, but. Yeah, the numbers are just ludicrous. And, you know, I think it's wonderful that in this country you can go from nothing to being a lawmaker.
She was a bartender.
There's a reason more bartenders aren't serving in Congress right now. I mean, honestly, and this is a 22-year-old saying this, there's a reason you kind of... We prefer lawmakers who have some sort of head on their shoulders. Now, that happens maybe 50% of the time, sort of, but usually it's not as just blatantly unrealistic as this.
So, you know, looking at climate change as well and what kind of impact this would make, and basically it would barely affect climate.
Right.
The Heritage Foundation noted according to the model for the assessment of greenhouse gas-induced climate change, using climate sensitivity of 4.5 degrees Celsius, the warming effect of a doubling of a carbon dioxide emissions, and estimate exceeding recent research on the topic, the world would be less than 0.2 degrees Celsius cooler by 2100. The rise of sea levels would be reduced by less than 2 centimeters. So, yes, let's destroy our economy.
What a huge impact.
Right. And, you know, I get so frustrated by the tack that people are pushing climate change, basically policy on us, to say, you know, they'll say that we're science deniers. And I believe that the climate's changing. Okay. I think it is. I think we've seen I think there's some good evidence for that. My question is, basically, I've got several questions when it comes to climate change. You know, I'm willing to accept the premise that you know, our climate's changing. But by how much? Also, is it cyclical? We don't have data going back far enough to know whether or not this is, you know, happened before in the past. How much does carbon emissions really contribute to this? Also, you know, is this really a bad thing? Because, for instance, what feeds on carbon dioxide? You remember?
Are you asking? Okay, yeah. I thought you were just going to keep talking. Trees, like plants.
Right, and there's evidence that we have we're seeing more vegetation as a result of carbon emissions going up. Which, of course, then produces more oxygen. So, you know, is this necessarily a bad thing in the long run? I mean, you know, it's like, what data sets are you looking at? I mean, are you looking at ocean surface temperatures? Are you looking at satellite data? It seems like the people who push climate change want to ignore the satellite data, which demonstrates it's, you know, temperatures are cooler than what the other data set that they like that fits their narrative better states. So, you know, there seems to be too much politics injected into this conversation and not enough, scientific inquiry in that. Let's look at some other possibilities. Let's consider, too, that we don't have, you know, data going back far enough to really know if this is a pattern or not. Also, how, you know, and while there might be consensus that the climate is changing, and that there might even be consensus in the scientific community that it's caused by man because of gas house emissions, carbon emissions, but there is not a consensus on whether, you know, is this going to be as devastating as what some people say? They already have egg on their face. I mean, if we were listening to Al Gore when he first started, you know, piping up about this stuff, I mean, the Earth would have already been destroyed by now. So,
well, don't you know that if we just let the cycle continue, sharks will be flying through the windows of the Utah State Capitol pretty soon, and we'll have a real crisis on our hands.
Yes, yes. Senator Mike Lee had an excellent speech. I think a number of Republicans tried mocking the Green New Deal in their floor speeches, but I have to give the best mockery award to U.S. Senator Mike Lee of Utah.
I was so impressed.
It was awesome.
I was so impressed by the straight face he kept. And the graphics, just the graphics he picked for
right.
it. I don't know that I've ever seen a better use of illustrations on the Senate floor.
And I have the transcript of the speech and the video of the speech, as well as the graphics that he used on up a caffeinated thought. So you can check that out. But yeah, I love this. And on entering this debate, I have a little fear in my heart too. But Mr. President, my fear at this moment may be a little bit different than that of my colleagues. Unlike some of my colleagues, I'm not immediately afraid of what carbon emissions unaddressed might do to our environment, our civilization, and our planet. Unlike others, I'm not immediately afraid of what the Green New Deal would do to our economy and our government. After all, it's not going to pass today. Rather, after reading the Green New Deal, I'm mostly afraid of not being able to get through this speech with a straight face.
Yeah, that was a winner. And I really liked the issues he chose to pick out. You know, as mm-hmm. I'll leave the cow thing be. It's realistic, but you know, I'm a vegetarian, so one can dream.
Yeah.
Not realistic.
In Ocasio-Cortez's defense, the farting cows were not part of the actual bill. That was just part of the first draft that was released of the frequently asked questions, because you know we're not going to get to zero emissions. Instead, we're going to get to net zero
right.
net emissions, because we can't eliminate air travel and farting cows is basically what the frequent FAQ
said. Probably there are a lot of ludicrous suggestions in AOC's Green New Deal, but and I mean the climate change debate is contestable, you know, no matter, and I feel like it's not really a one side or the other, it's a sliding scale. So you sit at one point, I probably sit a little bit further, but it's how are you going to go about addressing it that's really the issue here, not whether, you know, how are you going, like, what approaches are you going to bring to the table? And this was a disaster, but the idea of eliminating air travel just made me laugh so hard. I have a friend who's in school right now as he's going to a popular aviation school and learning about air control, air traffic control. And I texted him when this came out. I said, you should probably just change your major right now because you're not going to have a job here in a few years. She's like, right, I've been thinking about it. But Senator Mike Lieb just provided some brilliant solutions. So now I can really see how we can make this happen. We can
right.
save the planet by using tauntauns and those giant seahorse things. It'd be great.
Yeah. I'm wondering, and Senator Lee has not responded to my inquiry on Twitter, but I wonder if the federal government is going to provide tauntauns to every American family.
That's a great question.
I want my tauntaun, Kelby.
I mean,
and
I think it's a worthy, if I could pick something to subsidize. If I could just get rid of the fiscal conservative in me and subsidize something, that's what it would probably be.
Right, and for those of you who don't know what tauntauns are, first of all, shame on you for not knowing Star Wars. But it was the kind of the mammal that Luke Skywalker rode in The Empire Strikes Back on the ice planet of Hoth, and he was caught out overnight in this ice planet, which would have killed him, but this Tauntaun made the ultimate, well, Tauntaun, I think, actually already died, but he ended up taking his lightsaber and being able to slip inside the Tauntaun to keep warm. So
I firmly believe that the reason I don't really like Star Wars is because that scene scarred me as a child.
Yes, I'm
like,
sorry.
I haven't watched that movie in, I don't know, probably over a decade. but scarred.
You felt, you felt bad for the imaginary Tauntaun.
Right. I felt so bad for it, and it was disgusting, and oh. Man, that's what I think of when I think of the old Star Wars movies. So there's probably a Jedi wannabe out there hating me right now. But I knew exactly what a Tauntaun was because that image won't leave my head. So
yeah, well, I liked what he had to say to him. Not only are Tauntauns carbon neutral, but according to one report a long, long time ago and far, far away, they may even be fully recyclable for their warmth on especially cold nights.
Oh. Like it's really preying on my fears. Yeah. You know, I'll take one of the seahorse things. That seemed like a reasonable way to travel.
Yes, definitely.
Does that thing, I forget. I listened to the speech and I read through the transcript, but does that creature have an actual name? Or was it just the thing Aquaman rides from place to place?
Well, it looks like a big seahorse. Yeah, 20-foot seahorse he's riding. So that's what it means.
Okay, so just a monster seahorse. I'll take it.
Yeah, monster seahorse. So, yes, now the federal government is going to have to task NOAA to find these giant seahorses that we can and come up with a breeding program so that we can ride them.
You know, I feel like we've spent more money on things that are almost more ridiculous. So, should be following a trend.
Yeah.
Like, what was it? I forget the actual figure spent on this, but it was over 500,000. But a study on why coffee spills when you walk with it, funded by your tax dollars.
I'm clumsy.
I want to say it was about 700,000, but I don't have a source up in front of me right now. But I just think about that every tax season.
Right. You know, I actually support the idea of getting rid of cow flatulence because having lived up.
You want to be a vegetarian?
Living in a small town, cow farts smell and they stink up. You know, if you have it's not as bad as pigs, but if you live in the vicinity of a cow farm, it can get kind of nasty smelling.
You know, every teenage boy across America is picking the Green New Deal as his debate topic just because of that, right?
Right, right. I mean, I support getting rid of cow farts.
Exhibit A. And you're not even a teenage boy. So, yeah, there we go. But I think, I don't know, there's just some unique quality about AOC that just gets me riled up, which usually doesn't happen about politicians. They're politics, yes, but usually I don't want to just shake the politician. But maybe it's because she's so close to my own age.
She's older and wiser, Kelby.
Oh, yeah, couple years. No, but her response to Mike Lee's, the closure of his speech. And now I can understand very easily how people would twist his end thing, because he discussed, you know, basically if you wanted to get a poll quote from it, the poll quote is, have babies, save the planet. But he had a good point in that if you're not dedicated to the next generation, you have no reason to not absolutely sacrifice the economy for the sake of what you think would be good for the planet, which I think is a really important takeaway. Like, what's the point if this is all, you know, if we have no bent towards making things better for the next generation, what's the point of all this? I mean, nothing we see here is really going to pay off. And then no matter really, I mean, there are a few conservation and environmental bills and suggestions coming forth that will pay off in the next few years. But if you're addressing something like climate change, like, you're not looking to see a payoff in the next 5 years. So if you're not thinking about the next generation, there really isn't a point to doing this.
Right. And, you know, the thing that frustrates me about this whole debate is that I think there's some common ground that we can have on environmental issues between conservatives and liberals. You know, for instance, I like clean air. I think
good.
I think clean air is good. having lived in areas where the air was not as you know, great, the air quality was not as great as, or I don't want to say necessarily Des Moines is great, but compared to Northwest Indiana, Des Moines air is pretty good quality. I think it's important that we, you know, have good breathable air that doesn't make people sick. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, the Cuyahoga River in Ohio catching on fire. That's yeah. not good. Lake Erie was practically declared dead, and it's, you know, it making a comeback, and obviously rivers not catching on fire. That's a good thing. Those are good things. I think those are things that we could all unite around. We don't want burning rivers. We don't want dead lakes. We don't want to see all, you know, fresh, all these freshwater fish die off. These are good things. We don't want, you know, we don't want toxins and such being leaked into our water supply. You know, things that we can unite around.
Right. We like our bees. We want the bees to make it come.
Right.
Like that's a topic you could sit down with somebody who is completely politically different than you around a kitchen table and probably agree on. And those are really the things that we need to start addressing. And the fact is, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is never going to have as much of an impact on the environment, on improving conservation efforts as a private landowner, a farmer, a conservationist. For crying out loud, hunters are doing more to protect the planet than she is at this point. Groups like the American Conservation Coalition and the Property and Environment Research Center are putting forth really, really good work on how to balance the free market with protecting the planet. And these people are making so much more of an impact than putting forth a non-binding resolution to stamp your foot on the ground and say, I can make a difference. And it's really, this whole thing has just been really centered around a person, and that's not what it's going to take. It's going to take a lot of people, and it's especially going to take the private sector. And if we act as if this is something the government can do all on its own, we're going to see failure every single time.
Right. Well, I mean, government manages land so well.
Right.
I mean, they're the one of the primary reasons the forest fires. I know that gets blamed on climate change as well, but really, it's not. It's called, there's not enough cutting going on. They're not cutting enough trees and underbrush down in all these acres.
Right.
So these fires get out of control. You know, because forest fires happen. That's just part of the cycle. But generally speaking, you know, we don't have all the undergrowth and the dead stuff like, you know, we do now, because while clear cutting is not a good practice, they need to do a better job. And unfortunately, because we got all this land tied up in you know, federally controlled land, you don't have that going on like you do on private land. So, and you know, they're better stewards of the land, I think, than the federal government.
Right. Or like another example of the government versus the private sector, everybody's heard about the wild horse problem, and maybe this just stands out to me because, you know, I was a horse girl for years and years and years, and still am, just not actively. But right now, the federal government is housing more than 50,000 wild horses and burros in different facilities. It costs a taxpayer roughly $50,000 to take care of this horse for the span of its life, which is a problem. And I mean, it's a problem that there's not quite enough range room for them to begin with, but that's a separate problem. The problem is really, what are we going to do about it now? Mm-hmm. And so for years and years and years, the federal government has had people have to come and pay for these horses. You know, you come and pay us money to take the thing that taxpayers are paying $50,000 for. Well, they finally are testing a free market approach to this, and instead are offering taxpayers who are qualified to take in these horses $1,000 per horse, and they give about $500 up front once they get cleared to take the animal, and then they give $500 much further down the road. So it's not like somebody gets a cheap horse for slaughter or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And that's such a much more successful thing. And I know people would protest against, you know, well, federal government's paying, you know, this person money. They're paying $50,000 per animal for roughly 50,000 animals otherwise. So it's a fraction of the cost. But it's just, I mean, it's just such a simple shift from you come pay us to we'll pay you. Because realistically, the cost of a horse is not the purchase of a horse or what the animal itself costs. It's all the upkeep and care that comes along, as you well know, as I well know.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, they're almost as bad as children.
But much nicer.
Not bad. That's not the right word to use. They're almost as costly as children.
Yeah, they're pretty needy, too. But, I mean, there are so many simple solutions. And it's people like AOC that are pushing the narrative that the private sector can't do anything, that landowners can't do anything, that hunters aren't doing things. Like, hunters have been some of the best conservationists this country has seen. There was a group of hunters in the north that kept a duck that they enjoyed to hunt from going extinct because they noticed, you know, they noticed numbers were growing fewer, so they gathered themselves together and they made efforts to bring this duck population back because they wanted to keep hunting. And it's like, when you try to cut these people out of the equation, all your conservation and all your environmental efforts are going to fail. Like, it's not, the government is probably the least important piece in this puzzle. It's takes a lot of hands. It takes a village, if we want to
term
in there. Yeah.
And I think there's some definite, obviously there's some different philosophical or different worldview worldview differences between those who are pushing for all, you know, like things like the Green New Deal and those who just want to say, hey, we need to conserve what we have. We need to be good stewards. Because I think stewardship is obviously a biblical mandate for us. I mean, God told us, he commanded us to be good stewards of his creation.
That's, since this is an audience that, a lot of Christ followers are in the audience of Caffeinated Thoughts, that's something that always gets to me too. Like, we should be towards the forefront of being responsible, you know, being just smart ethical swaps that make a lot of difference. And there are some things that are so simple that you can change out, like buy a reusable water bottle instead of buying a plastic water bottle. Every single, you know, small things that really add up, and they're so simple too. So it's just another way of saying, you know, hey, we're Christians. God gave humans dominion on this planet. Let's take care of it really well.
And that's the key. Humans have dominion over the earth. The earth creation is for us, not vice versa. And it seems like it's inverted when you talk to an environmentalist. We're here to, you know, we're in the way of the earth. We are, you know, the earth is the most important thing. And I, some of these people, some of the more radical ones would love to see, you know, the human population cut in half. Kind of like Thanos almost
jeez.
It's like, man, I snapped my finger. No, but it's crazy. Some of the stuff that people believe. And it's literally, it really is worshiping the earth. And that's not what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be good stewards of it, not worship it.
Yeah. When I was, so you say that, when I was in college, I had a really heavy criminal justice emphasis on my degree, which you know about. And I took a class in domestic terrorism, which you also know about, but nobody else does. And so we covered a lot of these radical single issue groups. But we covered one, and they have, I don't want to butcher the name, but I believe it's called the Council of All Beings, which is almost like a conference for really radical people that are a little bit out of their mind about the environment. And so these people would come together for the Council of All Beings, and they'd all get, like, assigned something. So say I came to the Council of All Beings, I would be a blade of grass. Okay, so I'd have to go and think about what being a blade of grass must be like and dwell on that and try to put myself in the shoes of that blade of grass.
Wow.
And then I would come back. Yeah,
they don't.
True.
It doesn't think
the figurative
either.
Figurative shoes, the roots of that blade of grass, and I would come back to the Council of All Beings, and I would report on the evil lawnmower that cut me in half. And so on and so on and so on. So, yes, there is a very, not a fine line, there is a very definitive line between when humans cease to take good care of the planet and have wise dominion and when it starts turning into worship and emphasizing a non-living, you know what I mean, a soulless, because grass doesn't have feelings, it's okay, the lawnmower can cut it, it's fine. And granted, we should take good care of our animals. This is a discussion we've had a million times.
Right.
But still, it's, you know, when you start to elevate, when you start to diminish human morality and human souls in favor of not cutting a tree down, like another group, they spike the trees so that loggers who come to cut them down often have to avoid getting hit by these spikes that come out of the trees they fell. So things like that. There are definitely groups out there, but I think that's a fringe, thankfully. Hopefully it doesn't grow anymore.
Right.
But I think the more, yeah, what you said a little while ago about that kind of turning point between we have dominion to we're, you know, a problem for being here, I think that's the more fine line we see.
Right.
Which I'm grateful for. I'm happy that we don't have hundreds of people running around getting upset that we mow our lawns.
Right, yeah. And another thing, too, you know, as far as developing different alternative energy sources, I'm all for that just because, for starters, for national security purposes, we needed to, you know, decrease our dependence on foreign oil. Now,
well,
temporarily, that's going to mean that, you know, this is the thing that it frustrates me. It's like we can't go from, you know, a total dependence on foreign oil to suddenly not using any oil. We don't. The technology,
right.
I think, is going to eventually get us there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for instance, you know, people, if it's cheaper, especially, now the cost of the actual cars, for instance, aren't necessarily cheaper, but if it takes less to keep them going, you know, that's attractive to people. I think people are going to eventually, as these cars improve and become more cost, you know, decrease in cost, I think we'll see more people buying. But, you know, it's going to take a while for us to get to that point. So, and we've got natural resources here. You know, we need to tap into that as well as, and this is the thing that just boggles the mind, is how the Green New Deal totally avoids the topic of nuclear energy.
Yes, I was about to bring that up. Nuclear and hydro. It eliminates both. And I'm like, you want to talk about clean energy? And granted,
right.
Okay, yes. People panic over the idea of nuclear energy, just like a lot of people panic over the idea of flying in a plane because they've seen some crash. But the instances of any sort of meltdown have been so highly publicized, but so absolutely infrequent. So it's something, yes, you have to be really cautious when you develop nuclear, but it's such a clean and impactful energy, and to just
right.
completely see it eliminated from the Green New Deal, I'm like, you want to imitate Europe in so many ways. Why don't you try this?
Right. Yeah. It's amazing. Well, anything else in your mind you want to chat about?
No, I could probably rant about AOC for a little bit longer, but nobody wants to hear that. So.
Yeah, she definitely has outsized influence. It's just amazing to me how. I hope that diminishes. I think it is. It's diminishing probably a little bit, because I think Democrats are starting to realize that, especially the older Democrats, they don't necessarily want to. The ones that have at least a modicum of common sense don't want to tie
it
themselves.
It has been really fun watching Nancy Pelosi whip the freshmen into shape. Because, you know, say what you will about Nancy Pelosi, and I sure do, but she is good at keeping her house in order. And so that's been delightful. Like, I believe there was one source that talked about how AOC got assigned a handler for the State of the Union address because they were a little bit worried about what might happen if nobody was that close. And I'm like, I really want somebody else to confirm this because I can believe it, knowing Pelosi and knowing how the freshmen have been behaving this time around. But yeah, I read a piece talking about how they criticized Trump for his, you know, his aggression and his meanness, but it's exactly the characteristics they embody. And it was a really fascinating piece. I believe it was from the Wall Street Journal, Peggy Noonan, but that's definitely worth reading if anybody feels like looking it up. But yeah, like I said, that's really all I have left to say, bashing on AOC, and nobody needs that, so.
All righty. Well, hey, it was good having you on. We'll have to have you on a little more frequently.
And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Again, that's caffeinatedthoughts.com. Also, you can Google us at Caffeinated Thoughts, and it'll show up at the top of your search screen. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for emails. That way you don't miss a single update. Also, be sure to check us out in your favorite podcast app. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, Stitcher. If we're missing one, you'd like to see us there, you know, let us know. But until next time, my friends, take care. Have a great weekend. This is Shane Vanderhart signing off.